In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Yes, indeed. It is time for us to talk movies on a Monday afternoon. We're joined by Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Happy Monday, Alan. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing pretty darn fine. Thank you very much. Beautiful day out there.
Yeah. I'm still in shorts, man. I'm doing my best to hold out hope. I think if I got through today, I think I got a good shot at least getting through the end of the week.
You are tougher than me because I was up early, and it was chilly. It was frost on the pumpkin this morning.
Yeah, well, see, I didn't have to leave the house until later in the morning. So it was just one of those things where I was like, because when I got up and I looked at the temperature, I'm like, oh, well, that's not great. But I looked, and by the time I had to go out, it had gone up several degrees. So I'm like, all right, I can muscle through this.
Yeah, timing is everything in life.
Yeah, I listened to your last segment. You know, it's funny. I've been involved with not one but two dollar baby projects in the past.
Oh, really? I didn't. Did I know that? Maybe I did.
Yeah, you might have done. I did. One could argue I was the star, or one of the stars of the Last Rung on the Ladder, which was a production that the folks at NESCOM did.
That's right.
So many years ago.
That's right.
And then Sheridan actually taught a year in film class at UMaine, and one year their film project was a dollar baby. They did a version of Harvey's Dream. Actually, Bruce Pratt starred in that.
I remember that now that you mentioned it. That's right.
And he was great. And I am credited as animal wrangler. There are no animals in the film, but we filmed at our house, and my job was to keep Stella from barking.
That's important work in any kind of film project. So, well done.
I like that. I'm a valuable member of both cast and crew.
That's the way we view you here as well.
Aw, thanks, man.
You're welcome. You saw a lot of movies this weekend. My goodness, where should we begin?
Well, you know what? There's one that I'm particularly interested in sharing with you, just because I think it's a movie that you would really enjoy, and it's one that I don't think is necessarily getting as much attention as some of the other ones. It's a film called Faith Based, and it's written by a guy named Luke Barnett, who's also the star. He's his claim to fame. He was a big Funny or Die guy. So he and his partners did a bunch of work for like short films and whatnot for Funny or Die. But it's a comedy about two guys who decide, that their latest get rich quick scheme, involves, making a faith-based movie, a Christian movie for Christian audiences. Now you'd be forgiven for expecting a film like this with that sort of premise to be maybe cynical or mean-spirited, but it's really not, despite what the folks at Fox News and Breitbart, both of which went after this movie upon its announcement. Never seen it, hadn't even been made yet, but they made it very clear that this was a very bad movie. But instead, it's really much more about taking shots at greedy opportunists out there, as opposed to the well-meaning and good-hearted folks out there. And frankly, what it really is just a really solid buddy comedy, and a pretty smart look at the sort of spit and bailing wire world of indie filmmaking. Like, it's a really charming, really weird movie that's really quite good. So you've got these two guys, Luke. That's played by Luke Barnett, and Tanner, played by Tanner Tonneson. They're a couple of buddies. They live in Reseda, not really sure what they want to do with their lives. They're sort of drifting. Luke's a pool cleaner who also has a side hustle as part of a retail pyramid scheme selling weight loss tea. The company, by the way, is headed by his entrepreneurial idol, a gentleman by the name of Nicky Steele, played just exquisitely by Jason Alexander.
Oh, man.
we get to see sort of snippets delivering the sort of buzzword heavy and vaguely nonsensical sort of inspirational like comments that you would expect from that sort of person. And, you know, and Tanner's a bartender who basically does it for the free drinks and the, you know, and the access to the ladies. So they decide that they want to make a faith-based movie after a conversation with Luke's dad, Pastor Mike, played by Lance Reddick, who's probably best known as the concierge from the John Wick movies. But he has a small church. You know, Luke has this weird relationship with his dad. He's adopted and feels like he's a bit of a disappointment. But at a family dinner, Pastor Mike mentions that his church is struggling financially, and sort of mentions, sort of muses about how another church had solved its financial difficulties by backing a Christian movie. So this is the light bulb moment. And so Luke and Tanner get their friends together, and they decide they're going to make a faith-based movie of their own. You know, one that'll make them rich, but also help the church. And so they settle on their idea. They're going to make a movie about the first prayer in space. And then they decide they're going to make this movie. You know, their buddies are the crew, and they're holding out hope that they're trying to land the big star, because that's one of the things they learn in a wonderfully cynical turn from Margaret Cho as a Christian film executive. talking about what you need for these movies to be successful. It's probably the only time that they really take shots at that industry. But you need to have at least a C-list star. So their goal is to land the 80s action movie legend Butch Savage, who's played by David Koechner, who's also just delightful. But as you might imagine, making a movie is really difficult, and they encounter a lot of obstacles along the way. And these obstacles don't just impact the movie, but their friendship. And, you know, you start to question, well, this movie, you know, intended to bring many together, ultimately proved to tear them all apart. It's really funny. Like, it's clearly like super low budget. Like, it's obviously a movie that's a labor of love in a lot of ways, but you know, they've got some legitimate names, whether you're talking about, you know, Reddick or Cho or Koechner, and Alexander is just, he's just awesome. He's just awesome in this movie. But again, they do poke fun at Christian entertainment. Like, there's some great goofs in the movie within a movie that they're making. It is ultimately called A Prayer in Space. There's actually a spectacular parody of Christian rock that I wouldn't dream of spoiling, but it is legitimately laugh out loud funny. But really, it's the relationship at its center. And the comedic exploration of indie filmmaking that really makes this movie funny. Like, it's filled with the sorts of, you know what I mean when I say like a smart dumb joke. Like,
yes,
it's a lot of those, and I find those kinds of jokes, just personally, I find those delightful. And this movie is just rife with them. It's one of those rare movies that clearly respects its targets, even while it's landing some pretty good hits. Like, it's clever, but it's not glib. It's not condescending, but, you know, even as it's making fun. I was really pleasantly surprised by this movie. And I hope that people take a chance on it. One might say, you might want to have a little faith.
Oh, do we lose Alan?
Oh, no, am I here?
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Did I fade away?
You did, just for a brief moment, and I was sad and wondered what to do with myself. But you're back, and now things are good again. So let's talk about, let's see what's next. I don't know. I've seen the trailer enough, so I have a pretty good idea where we're going to go. So let's hear about The War with Grandpa.
Oh, man. Lest we forget, Rich, as movie fans, we're aware that Robert De Niro is one of our greatest living film actors. The history of American cinema cannot be told without including him and a number of his films. He has seven Academy Award nominations for acting, 5 for Best Actor, 2 for Best Supporting, and he has a win in each. We are talking about a titan of cinema. We are also talking about a man who has long shown willingness to undertake projects that won't get him anywhere near the Oscar stage, making loads of films that, to be kind, we'll just call them more populist than prestigious.
Yes, yes.
You can probably guess into which category The War with Grandpa falls. Look, it's a family-friendly comedy, pretty standard fare. it's tame kid stuff that's aiming to be, you know, entertaining in an inoffensive way. Like, it's the sort of movie that, that younger viewers will probably find delightful, and that older audiences will find more or less tolerable. That being said, this movie's cast is shockingly good. Like, I mean, we're not just talking about De Niro here. Like, Uma Thurman is in this movie. Christopher Walken is in this movie. Cheech Marin is here. Jane Seymour is here. Like, it's a legitimately, like, talented cast, and it's weird that they're in this movie. And I'm not entirely sure how this happened. You know, and granted, the quality of the performance can't fully make up for the sort of generic quality that we're talking about here. It doesn't hurt. Like, in lesser hands, this movie would have been just bad. But instead, we get a pleasant, albeit forgettable, 90-ish minutes. So here's the gist. Peter, a young man played by Oakes Fegley, is going into the sixth grade. He's nervous about it. He likes video games, likes sneakers, all that sort of stuff. But he's got a problem. See, his parents, Sally and Arthur, Sally played by Uma Thurman, Arthur played by Rob Riggle, have decided that Sally's dad, Peter's grandfather, and that would be Ed, played by De Niro, is going to move in with them after an unfortunate incident at the grocery store. And he's going to live in Peter's room. Now, Ed's not really interested in moving in with his daughter. He's a retired carpenter, a builder, guy who's provided for himself and his family for years. Not thrilled with the notion of moving in with his daughter, but not left with much of a choice. Meanwhile, Peter, not really interested in moving into the attic, also doesn't see much of a choice. But Peter's friends encourage him to fight for what is his, and so he decides to declare a war of sorts with his grandfather, launching into a series of pranks in an effort to get his room back. A lonely and kind of, you know, and kind of aimless Ed, initially sort of bemused by it all, but eventually really commits. And so what follows is a rapidly escalating battle of wills. Both Peter and Ed are surprisingly willing to go above and beyond in an effort to achieve victory. They have their support team. Billy, you know, Peter has his friends, Billy, Steve, Emma. Ed's got his pals, the young at heart Jerry, that's Walken, the sort of Lothario Laney's man Danny, that's Cheech, and his new friend Diane, played by Jane Seymour, and they're all ready to go for it. However, as you might expect with a film like this, things get a little out of hand, and when things start to spiral out of control, they have to decide whether family harmony is worth more than the room over which they are ultimately fighting. This movie is okay. it's that sort of it's a sort of gentle, fitfully funny movie that would have been really right at home on like a kid-oriented cable network, your Nickelodeons or your Disney channels. The fact that it stars multiple Oscar winners and a number of other cinematic notables changes the calculus a little, but I mean only enough to sort of bump this movie up to the level of, you know, the aforementioned okay. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, honestly, the world could do with a few more movies that achieved okay. But with a cast bloated like this, it's tough to avoid considering what might have been if they had, you know, been in a better movie. But I think the biggest issue with the movie is that there's a fundamental disconnect at the center. The driving action of this does not make any sense. Okay, kid wants his room back. Great. How does torturing his grandfather get that for him? It's not like Ed's going anywhere. He lives there now, and so you're watching this, and I know, like, trying to, you know, come up with the logic behind this, the narrative of this movie is pointless. Like, the movie exists so tweens can watch, you know, can watch their peers, like, jump scare old people and, like, make them fall down in a way that looks painful but is ultimately harmless. Like, that's what this movie exists to be. And as far as that goes, there's some fun to be had. There are a couple of good jokes. It's a pretty solid bit of physical comedy. And when it really leans into that sort of slapstick aspect, it kind of cooks. But there's just too much other stuff that gives us too much time to actually start thinking about what's going on. And once you start thinking about a movie like this, it all falls apart, Rich. Again, performances are fine. I really still don't understand how they managed to line up a cast like this for a movie like this. But you know, it's formula, it's family friendly, it's basically the cinematic equivalent of background noise. The kids will like it well enough, which really is all a movie like this needs to do.
All right, then up next, a movie entitled Hubie Halloween with Adam Sandler and Kevin James. From my movie-going perspective, that would be strike one, two, and three, but I'll let you tell me more.
Look, Rich, like all moviegoers are different. Like, everybody has their own personal tastes. We have likes and dislikes that are specific to ourselves, you know, and it's important to note, it is possible to like things that are bad and dislike things that are good.
Yes.
Like, that's, you know, that's, well, frankly, I feel like that's the foundation of Mr. Sandler's entire career in the movies. And I'll freely admit, I came of age in the early 90s. So, I experienced the beginnings of the Sandlerian over at precisely the right age. Like, Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore, The Waterboy, like, they were in my just square in the middle of my juvenile humored wheelhouse when I saw them. So even as I grew up and my tastes became a little more sophisticated, I still maintain a real affection for Adam Sandler and his work. And objectively, I can look at his output and recognize its many, many, many flaws. I can watch these movies and acknowledge how bad they are. Does it change the fact that part of me still kind of enjoys watching them? Like, even the really bad ones.
Well, and I've come around a little bit after our conversation last week with actor Barry Livingston, who was in You Don't Mess With the Zohanna, and talked about Adam Sandler being just one of the nicest guys in the business, who promised him a part in a film, and it took years for it to happen, but finally did it. So, look, he's keeping his friends employed and seems to be a nice person, so go, Adam.
Well, you know, and that's kind of the thing. It's like, there are a lot of really talented people who continuously show up in these Adam Sandler projects, and that to me speaks to someone who, at the very least, is a pleasure to work with. You know, whether or not you dig the sorts of stories that he's telling, it's clearly a good time, like, to be involved in making these movies. Like, it's, you know, you never hear people being like, oh, I did that Adam Sandler movie and I'll never do another one, because, like, people are clearly enjoying themselves. And again, this latest one, Hubie Halloween, is not one of the really bad ones. You know, it's not good, but it's not nearly as awful as some of what he's churned out in recent years. It's directed by Steve Brill. Sandler co-wrote the script alongside Tim Herlihy. And it's pretty typical. It's the standard goofy-voiced man-child boilerplate packed with dumb jokes, stupid gags, all delivered by the usual assemblage of buddies and relatives. You know, Shaggy and Sloppy in the usual ways. But there's a low-key cheerfulness, like, at this movie's heart that kind of elevates it a little bit. Now, again, it's far from the top of the Sandler canon, but I would argue it's even farther from the bottom. And honestly, these days, that's a win. The basic plot, such as it is, we're in Salem, Massachusetts. Hubie Dubois is Sandler. He has devoted his entire life to ensuring the safety of the masses during the Halloween holiday. He's appointed himself a Halloween monitor. He rides his bike all over town to encourage good behavior. But for reasons that are never really explained, and a little like off-putting at times, his tendency towards helpfulness has basically resulted in a pathological loathing toward him from the entire town. Like, everywhere he goes, like, he's scorned, mocked, like, young, old, doesn't matter. Like, all these people just take great delight in calling him names, yelling at him, throwing stuff at him, scaring him. The only two people in town who don't treat him just with outright hostility are his mom, played by June Squibb,
oh.
You know.
Oh, man.
Awesome. And his old schoolmate, Violet Valentine, played by Julie Bowen, best known for Modern Family, but made one of her first big appearances as the love interest in Happy Gilmore,
right.
So many years ago. But yeah, so Halloween's approaching, things are ramping up at Salem, but everyone's on alert because rumor has it, a former resident of the town, long confined to a mental institution, has escaped and his whereabouts are unknown. Plus, Hubie has a new neighbor named Walter, played by Steve Buscemi, and he's behaving awfully suspiciously as well. Hubie tries to share his concerns with the local police, specifically Officer Steve Downey, the aforementioned Kevin James, but he gets shot down. And then things get really weird because people start disappearing. But since the police won't listen and the powers that be are more concerned with Halloween tourism dollars than anything else, it's left up to Hubie. He has to figure out what's going on, protect his home and his friends with just it's just him and his custom-made thermos. Now, Rich, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that this is a great movie, not even a particularly good movie. All of the usual Sandler criticisms are in full effect. I was still entertained. Like the weird voice affect, the ridiculous running gags, the supporting cast of stars who are clearly slumming. Like, I'm here for all of it. Like, I'm, you know, like I recognize I am who I am as far as stuff like this goes. Like, it doesn't make any sense, but it doesn't matter. Like, I'm not here for sophisticated plot machinations and high-level cinematography. Like, I'm here for fart jokes and people falling down. And this movie definitely delivers. One of the things, one of my observations was, look, man, like, every generation deserves its own earnest, scared, stupid. Congratulations, youth of today. This one is yours.
Right, there you go. From Alan Adams, talking about Hubie Halloween here on Pass the Popcorn. Alan, we're not going to have time to get to the Blumhouse-Amazon collaboration, Black Box and the Lie, but maybe we can talk about that a little bit on Wednesday.
Yeah, we can chat about that a little bit. It's they're dropping two more tomorrow, so there'll be plenty to talk about.
That sounds good. Alan, thanks as always. We'll check in with you again in a couple of days' time.
Sounds good.
Alan Adams of the Main Edge talking movies on Pass the Popcorn.